pedagogy, a fancy word for learning. But learning happens most effectively when the student participates in comparison and construction. Now, you're listening to this, and so I have no way of making sure you do your homework. But I invite you, as I make some analogies from Western culture, for you to construct your own set of analogies and parallels and contrasts as a way of fine-tuning your understanding and appreciation of Hebrew poetry. Now, I will occasionally refer to different scholars. I'll try to keep this to a minimum. But where I do refer to different scholars, the bibliographical data is available to you in the study guide. Let's begin. What is Hebrew poetry? Hebrew poetry is a type of language, but it is not just a stark alternative to Hebrew prose. There are four elements of Hebrew poetry. Terseness in style, that means in Hebrew you get to the point. Figurative language, to talk about God as a mighty warrior in Exodus 15, is figurative language. Multivalent meaning. This means a text might mean more than one thing. And one wonders, are there places where the mountains and hills are really referencing to something broader? Or could they just be mountains and hills? Multivalent meaning of the text and the emotive goal of the text. Sometimes the text is going to say, for instance, in Psalm 13, look and consider. Sometimes the text is going to invite you to praise the Lord, praise the Lord. The emotive goal of the text. Now, we've just talked about four elements of Hebrew poetry, but all of these elements, to a lesser degree, also occur in Hebrew prose. So one of the things to keep in mind is that you want to be pretty loose, because Hebrew poetry and Hebrew prose are a continuum, not differences of kind. Now, there are some more distinctive poetry markers that I want to lift up for you, though. In poetry, you're going to pay more attention to the line. In Hebrew narrative, the paragraph's going to really generate how you interpret a piece. Also, you're going to pay more attention to word pairs, heaven and earth, sea and land, these sorts of things. You have patterns of repetition, and they'll be structured by various elements in the line. For instance, all good folks behave badly. All good folks behave with disdain. Is an A-B-A-B pattern. Not only did I use literally the A's and the B's, but the two lines should have some connections and similarities that you can discern as you're piecing the poem together. Sometimes you'll get a pattern not A, B, A, B, but you'll get a pattern A, B, C, B prime, A prime. We call this chiasm. And these literary conventions are at work in Hebrew poetry. Now, Hebrew poetry also has a sense of meter. Meter is a constituent element of a line. We might even call, and sometimes you'll see this described as a cola. In English poetry, we might call it a meter or a foot. In English poetry, when we talk about pentameter, that means 5 feet. In Hebrew, we're going to talk about tricola, that means 3 feet, or three different sections in the line. Now, some scholars are going to argue, such as Sigmund Moewinkel, that there is such a thing as regular meter. Other scholars are going to argue, no, there's no such thing as meter. Here, O'Connor and Kugel. And then...